Good morning. It's Saturday, February 9th, 2013. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. Today on Geek Speak, alternate universe geeks take over the show. We'll talk the philosophy of tech for the greater good, collaboration, and the value of social networking in meat space. It's time now for Geek Speak. Yes, yes, welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Bonnie Jean Primsch. I'm filling in for your usual host, Lyle Troxell. And today I'm joined by members of the Union of Benevolent Electrical Workers. That's a radical tech collective based in Santa Cruz. Today with me, Wes Modes, May Hamrick, Jeremiah Daniels, and James Burgess. And we're just going to go over a little bit who these folks are and why they're here today. And let's see, we have Wes Modes. You're a 30-year veteran of the IT industry, artist, and community organizer.
Or so says my bio. Thanks, Bonnie.
Or so says your bio. We also have James Burgess sharing the microphone with him, programmer of Dinosaur Technologies. I want to know about that. And RC Helicopter Geek.
Hi, Bonnie. This is James.
Hello, James. May Hamrick is a consulting software producer and code mollusk.
Yep.
Oh, and what do you mean when you say code mollusk? What's that?
It just means that I like octopi.
Okay, very good. Yes. And Jeremiah Daniels, operator of 10 years of something, internet community supporter and volunteer. Jeremiah, operator of what?
Operator of systems and network in general.
Got it. Okay. So those are the geeks that we have with us today. And together, you are members of the Union of Benevolent Electrical Workers. And I'm interested to know how that name came to be and what the organization is. Wes, would you?
Hi, this is Wes. This is it's a venerable organization that goes back to the mid-19th century. So this is as electrical workers started to get together and start to electrify towns in Indiana and then in Niagara Falls, that people started to get together and say, like, well, you know, there must be an alternative way to pursue this new technology that isn't just for profit, but also for good. Mm-hmm. So this is a venerable organization that we've brought back to life in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. and so have provided mutual support for local radical groups, as well as provided accessible technology education for folks.
Okay, and is that's the function of the group, to be a mutual support for radical community organizations and make tech accessible? Is that sort of the function?
Yeah, I think that sums us up pretty well. There's also some beer drinking in there and some a lot of social networking as well.
Right.
Social networking for purely the fun of it versus a lot of geek groups you find that are social networking for career reasons or whatever.
And is there some value to that? I'm assuming there is, right? I mean, beyond just kind of the social scratch.
The beer is really good.
James says that the beer is really good. Yeah. Okay. And so how do you go about making tech accessible to others? Jeremiah.
So what do we do is we organize groups of people who might have a particular skill set, for instance, programming or networking, mm-hmm. or computer repair, and we'll host using the free school system to, invite members of the community who don't know anything about this stuff to mm-hmm. listen to a expert, judicious use of air quotes there, and share that knowledge and empower them.
Okay. Now, we have people listening from beyond Santa Cruz area who may not be familiar with the free school system. So who can say what free school is all about?
So I've been involved. This is Wes again.
Yeah.
I've been involved in free school for about 8 years. This is a free educational project that happens centered around Santa Cruz, but also there's lots of projects in the East Bay and Portland and West Marin and mm-hmm. Ithaca, New York, and mm-hmm. all over the country now. And the idea is as Jeremiah said, that people share what they know. So you know a little bit of something about auto repair, and I know a little bit of something about Marx and Engels, and so I share what I know, mm-hmm. and you don't go to my class because it's boring to you, but I share it with other people.
Right, and so it all works out.
Yeah,
I like to think about free school as being sort of like, you know, Khan Academy, only it's in meat space, and you actually, you know, sit down with people whom you may or may not know and learn something new.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's on the continuum in the spectrum of those sort of individual focused educational, non-standard educational institutions / operations.
Yeah. I would think it would be enjoying a bloom perhaps because of the rise of maker culture, true or false?
Thinking,
processing, please hold.
I think that free school has kind of happened in its own rhythm, but I think that the interest in our hacktivism classes that we teach on a quarterly basis through free school has definitely blossomed because of that.
Okay.
So that when we teach a class on, I don't know, like basic Linux, I get, you know, half a dozen people. But when we taught a class on 3D printing, which James is going to teach us kind of a follow-up to that, this coming quarter, we had a dozen and had to turn people away. There's like 20 people there. So, yes, make culture positive.
Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Is
like,
a good
like,
thing.
Click.
Yeah. Jeremiah.
And a lot of the cyber culture is around the nation and around the world, actually. Is they're starting hacker spaces and things like that. People who need to be or who want to share and find a collaborative workspace and technology-based projects and things like that on their own time, and also, you know, with trying to get other people's brains into the problem. Can't lone wolf it forever.
Yeah, right on. So that's what UBU does. There's a strong social element. That's how I hooked in with the group, by the way. Nice beer. Gathering at a local place and just kind of chitty-chatting amongst yourselves and also offering hacktivism classes.
It's important to drink fermented beverages when you work around electronics all the time. It helps maintain a equilibrium inside.
It's chemically beneficial.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes, indeed. All right. And so and now what I'd like to do is just talk a little bit about why each of you are attracted to this group. Why this group? What's your personal connection to it? And James, would you like to start?
Hi. Yeah. So I moved to Santa Cruz probably about 6 years ago.
Okay.
And I work from home. And that's somewhat isolating. And I was actively looking for ways to connect with more people that I thought would be like me. And sure enough, you show up at a UBU Hackerspace hacking event, and there are all these great people that you can connect with. They've got interesting skills that you don't have yourself.
Mm.
And it feels like community right there.
Yeah, it's a good sense of community. You were looking for community and you found one.
I found it, yeah.
Got it. And how about you, Wes? What was your attraction?
So this is Wes. I think that I've been working in IT for about 25 years. So for me, for the most part, doing stuff in IT has been like working evil. Like I've had evil magic that I'm responsible for. So, you know, like you work at a .com company and you help
you
them.
You mean evil, like finger tenting, finger pricing,
yeah,
evil.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah. Okay. And so, you know, you work at a .com company or someplace in Silicon Valley and you're helping somebody do something that's, you know, like at best is neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And at worst is just making more people buy more crap that they don't need, right? So for me, doing something with technology that felt like it was for good, that actually had a positive influence on my community, on the people I loved and cared about, the projects that I really admired, felt like something really amazing. And getting together with people to do that is even more amazing.
Tech for good and tech in community for good.
Yes.
And what does good mean? Like what's an example of tech for good?
Siri, define good. for me, I mean, I have kind of anarchist-y roots, and I think UBU does too. So that means like mutual support for other people, personal and autonomy, making things happen without other people telling you how they should happen.
Okay, so being able to do it for yourself.
Do it for yourself, but also caring for other people. James.
So I should say one of the things that immediately attracted me to UBU was the first meeting I went to. they were building a thing called a TV Begone, which is an awesome device, which you click a button and it knows 150 words for no that TVs will recognize and shut off.
And this is for use in sports bars, I'm assuming.
Exactly. Yeah. So sports bars become a much more interesting place with one of these devices. I knew right away, because they were building one of those devices, I was going to like these people. And
wait, I'm just curious, what happens when you've got a lot of beer and people really enjoying a game and a TV be gone in a sports bar? What happens after it is clicked?
Hilarity ensues.
You don't really point out the fact that you have the TV be gone.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. I was going to say. So, May, now that we're talking with you, what's your personal attraction to UBU? Why are you part of the group?
Well, I would just agree with everything that Wes and James said, except that just add my personal story, which is much of my professional life was over the hill, which, you know, is great. But I choose to live in the Santa Cruz area for a particular reason. There's a particular vibe over here in Santa Cruz. But one of the things that does seem to happen is for tech culture, people don't want to have their job extend into their lives over the hill over here.
Work-life separation.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I was kind of missing a little bit of that sort of personal tech stimulation. I happened to bump into, you know, various people, Wes, and there was this conversation about, oh, hey, we're doing this thing where we're, you know, supporting other people. And it sounded very much like the Santa Cruz ethic that I think they're, you know, what I think the Santa Cruz ethic is.
Yeah.
And it sounded a little bit techie, and it's like, oh, well, I can just do this.
Mm-hmm. So it was a way to marry the tech that you loved with the place that you loved.
Exactly.
Got it. And Jeremiah?
My history with UBU goes back to the late 90s, actually, but I didn't know it. I was a part of a organization of youth in Arcata, California, far up north, for those of you who don't know the California layout. And We started a organization, a nonprofit called Cyber Tribe, and our dedication was to empower youth through technology and make sure that kids had the skills to go into the IT industry and really just take leadership roles and get things done. And you know, that was a really influential part of me as a young adult.
Uh-huh.
And ever since then, I've been moving my career forward, but I've always been thinking, you know, wow, this is dangerous stuff. Like, you have an entire population now beholden to corporations who control basically every aspect of our, of like, what information we get.
So it sounds like there's some urgency for you that people understand this thing that is such a part of the fabric of our lives now.
Exactly. And I don't think I had political inclinations back in the late 90s so much as I just wanted to make sure that my friends and I could, you know, make it rich in Silicon Valley when we move on down here.
That was the dream.
But now I realize we're really in it together as a population. And if we can't share this information and start getting a hold of the keys to the doors of technology, then we're in trouble.
Right. So we are about to take a break. When we come back, these are the geeks that are available to you who are listening right now. If you would care to call in and ask a question, join the conversation about tech for the greater good and getting tech into the hands of the people, or just what's wrong with my UB, my ports or whatever, give us a call. The
this
phone
is
number.
Bonnie revealing her tech stuff.
Like, I'm a radio person. I'm not really a geek. The phone number here is 800-655-5877. We'll be taking your calls and inviting you to join the discussion once we come back from the break. This is Geek Speak on KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak on 88.9 KUSP and KUSP.org, filling in for your usual host, Lyle Troxell. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch. Today on Geek Speak, I'm joined by members of the Union of Benevolent Electrical Workers, a radical tech collective based in Santa Cruz. We're talking today with Wes Modes, May Hamrick, Jeremiah Daniels, and James Burgess. So there are various things that draw each of you. You sort of form a super friends, right, of knowledge about tech.
Right.
And so what what do each of you find of particular interest? Wes, would you like to start?
I just like that you said Super Friends, because not so much that it gets at the super, but it also gets at, like, Batman can't swim under the ocean.
Yeah.
That's Aquaman's job.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. I'm like one of the people who just have a utility belt, mm-hmm. not very super at all.
And we have a call right now, and it is from Godot in North Dakota.
Are the reports not working?
No, he's wondering how we can use tech in the current environment to protect ourselves.
Yes, I'm here if you can hear me.
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I just noticed a number of things that have happened in the news stories recently. There was trap wire, led to the understanding that they're building a facility in Utah, which will collect all of the camera feeds from all the security cameras in the country. The facility in Utah contains 200 acres of false floor, is the number that I read, which is like a huge database. And then,
the
FAA granted a variance for the military and police to fly drones over the domestic airspace.
Okay, Godot, hold on. We've got a response for you here from Jeremiah.
So there's some things you can do to just protect yourself in general. There's an organization called Tor. It's called the Onion Router, torproject.org. Check them out. They have a great browser bundle that will go ahead and kind of encrypt and mask where all your traffic goes and comes from. I highly suggest that. Also, for your personal computer security, whether you're Windows, Mac, or Linux, there's a little program called Little Snitch, and it'll tell you when all these little things are connecting out without your permission, and you can say, nope, I don't want to send any information anywhere. that's really important, like some first steps that no one ever really takes when they're, you know, getting used to computers.
May?
Yeah, I was going to add on there. I use a piece of software called AdBlocker, and it's probably not exactly what you're going for, but following on with what Jeremiah was saying, mm-hmm. it's also very easy to use. I think it's free. It's donationware.
And if you're really worried about facial recognition on cameras and things like that, there's a couple of different ways you can take care of that. You know, there's biosensors, special UV lights that you can set up on the ring of your hoodie or your brim of your hat so that it'll shine a UV light in your face, or IR light in your face, rather, and it'll make the cameras not be able to see your face. Also, there's new techniques for painting on camouflage that computers cannot do any sort of recognition of your face. So,
yeah, and also I was...
My concern is a little more general than that. I mean, now there's Argus, this... highest resolution camera ever, which they are going to release in a drone soon, and then there's the DHS purchase of $1.5 billion rounds of ammunition, and then this recent white paper from the Department of Justice that says it's okay to assassinate U.S. citizens.
Yeah, we're getting into territory, Godot, where like everything is wrong and bad. And, each thing has to be addressed individually, I suppose. And Wes has some input here.
Yeah, I think that all those things are worrying and something to think about. And I think it's a real challenge to try to, for me, the reason I'm a radical is because I'm looking at, the roots of things. So for me, it isn't enough to be like, I'm going to be like Code Pink and I'm going to go interrupt a Senate hearing about who's going to be confirmed for the CIA or whatever. I think things are kind of more basic and more messed up at sort of a basic level. So in some ways, working within my community is the best way that I have of making change, rather than being it could be a new bumper sticker. Be frustrated globally. Be effective locally. I don't know.
Nice.
Well, that is that analogy, right? Like, it's one thing to try and shut down a factory farm, and it's another thing to start up a farm the way you think it should be done.
And not to say that one shouldn't be concerned about, you know, the bunker in Utah recording all your, you know, internet transactions or the factory farm.
Creepy.
Those things are really worth...
And every place you drive, every time you go anywhere.
Yeah. Godot, we've got some other callers. Thank you for bringing up that concern. And Jeremiah, if you know of links for some of the things that you talked about or may, then we can provide them at the Geek Speak page for this show.
Of course.
Thanks, Godot. Thanks for calling. And we also have on line two, Peggy in Santa Cruz, who's got a problem with Google email and her iPad. Can anyone address that? Let's find out. Let's find out what's going on with Peggy. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'm not very political here, but concerned about privacy issue. I forwarded my son a link to my, I had gotten a JetBlue flight, and I forwarded that itinerary to my son using my iPad on Google, on my iPad. And he emailed me back and said, well, just for your information, you actually emailed me, and he gave me the link that somehow came to him, which opened up all my mail.
Ooh.
Ooh. So, of course, I changed my password, but I really, you know, was sort of mindless once I hit the forward. And I wonder how I did that. Now, when I called Apple, because I have that ability to call them directly, they said they had not heard of it, but they gave me an email to do to Google. Google never responded the privacy email that I wrote to them.
All right. Well, we've got some interesting sort of puzzled faces here. And
yeah, I don't know how. So basically, I don't know how I did that. And I shouldn't have done it, been able to do it according to the Apple people.
Right, right.
Well, there's also the question of maybe that was somehow related to the JetBlue URL, because there are a class of URLs that are called web capabilities that are intended to incorporate the authorization to do something like use a credit card or you know, buy a...
I think he said it happened once before.
Oh.
He's pretty big, a busy guy, but I think exactly, I think I might have done it. Do you think it's got to do with JetBlue?
It could.
And Wes, what's your input on this?
Yeah, one? I think Maeve's suggestion sounds wacky. So,
we've got a car talk moment here.
Yeah, this is a car talk moment. Don't listen to my brother. He doesn't even use the internet.
Don't listen to my brother.
So what's your thought then, Wes?
Yeah, my thought is, so were you ever over... I don't know. That sounds, yeah, I'm with Apple Tech.
This is a 70-year-old person here who doesn't understand anything, and I love my iPad because it's, like, mindless, usually.
Right, yeah, it's supposed to be fail-safe, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, but that's not too cool, so.
It's really hard for me to try to even contrive a situation in which that could be possible. I don't have any doubts about your report.
Happened.
Yeah, it happened, right?
Right.
I would say one thing. This is like one of those, like, well, I can't answer your question, but here, let me answer another question. Make sure Google doesn't, by default, tend to log you out of stuff. And I think that that becomes a real security challenge, because you can walk away from, if your son is visiting you, you're visiting your son, it's very easy to stay logged in accidentally.
Okay, well, there is a place, if you go all the way at the bottom of the of your Google map, of your Google sign-in, there's something called details. If you hit that, you can log off all other places that you've been on.
Oh, that's nice. Thanks. We need to write down your number, and we're going to call you for tech support and for further questions.
Yeah, right. Well, just because I'm a little bit, you know, I traveled in Japan a couple years ago, and I found it out there. But anyhow, because I was sort of mindless walking away from things. And anyway, just so you could, so you know, you actually is a way you can go back. And but the thing that was kind of weird was that, well, my son's too busy for me to call him every minute and have him follow this through. But anyhow, I really don't know if he could actually open it up. The link he sent back to me, because then it was on my Google, I could open it up, and it was obviously current from the time I had sent it. In other words, you know, a couple days later, it was still opening it up.
It's the universe's way of reminding you that there are still mysteries in the
yeah,
world.
Yeah, okay. So basically,
thanks for your call.
I'm sorry.
Oh, thanks for your call. Yeah, we're just going to have to leave that at a mystery, because I don't think we know.
Okay.
We're enjoying the mystery, and I'm sorry that happened to you, Peggy.
No, okay.
I hope it won't happen again.
Yeah, me too. Okay, yeah. Bye.
Yikes.
Bye, Peggy.
Everyone be concerned.
We're concerned.
Oh, man, this is super creepy. And we have another call now from JC of Santa Cruz. He's got a Hotmail account. And it's a concern about junk mail. Any knowledge of Hotmail in the room?
Okay, find the place.
15 years ago, yes.
Yeah, all right. Let's see
if we can... You should switch to AOL.
Let's see if we can be of service to JC. Hello, JC. You're on Geek Speak.
I feel so ancient.
So, anyway, yeah, what's your situation?
I've got the inbox and I've got the junk mail box.
Mm-hmm.
Junk mail goes into the junk mail, and when I go to delete it from junk mail, as it goes into the deleted file or the deleted box, it's all opened, and I can't figure that out.
You mean the junk? The junk mail has been marked as read?
Yeah, read. Yeah.
Okay. That's probably an automatic feature. A lot of automatic filters actually do that. And in fact, there's like an option on Macintosh mail.app where you can turn that on by default. And every time it goes into the junk folder, it's marked as read. It's just it kind of cleans things up on the server side so that, you know, if you're doing some other kind of session, you're connecting to your mail server via IMAP or POP or something like that, then it doesn't show up in a weird way. So that's
it doesn't actually open up the mail and leave me vulnerable to anything that might have been on that.
No, I wouldn't. If it's automatically put into your junk mail and it just looks like it's been opened, that just means that it's marked as read, so that there's no. You know, there's less chance for you to open it later on if you were to, for whatever reason, connect to Hotmail via IMAP or POP or some other protocol.
I was just going to say that, yeah, there are default keys that will go to the next unread mail message. So I think that they do automatically mark it as read so that you don't accidentally hit one of those keys and then accidentally open up a junk mail.
Okay, well, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, sounds like there was less problem than there might have been there. For shoo! Thank goodness. So let's talk about the sort of classes that UBU offers. What kinds of things are you wanting people to understand about tech and how to wield it for yourselves, Wes?
Hey, Bonnie, this is Wes. I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to give a shout out for some news.
Oh, some news.
That I heard in the world. This week I got word that there is a mom's hackerspace in Oakland.
What?
Called the Mothership Hacker Moms.
That sounds awesome.
And it's actually a woman-centered hackerspace. And there's pictures of all these moms, like, with their kids in there doing cool.
Oh, my gosh. I want a link
stuff.
To that. Do we have a link to that?
Yes,
we do. Okay, we're going to provide that at the show page for today because that sounds great.
And so that's, like, the news is, like, a couple days old, though they're probably been there for a while. But right. I just found out about them.
Just found out. Okay.
Anyway, but I wanted to
so
mention
So it's happening
that,
elsewhere.
Because that falls... That falls into things that are definitely of interest to us. So when we talk about accessible, we don't just mean like the digital divide that was around that we heard about over and over again during the 90s.
Yeah, and which is still an issue on a global basis.
Which is still an issue, but like even among people who have access to technology, there's a large differential. So for us, like making technology available, not just to people who it might have been like out of reach, but even for people who weren't encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
To pursue technology,
mm-hmm.
women and people who aren't middle class and aren't white and so on.
Right, right.
Right, and I was just going to say I was looking at the webpage for Hacker Moms, and one of the taglines was growing hacker sprouts.
Aww.
Which, you know, to me, I totally understand that. I have a child myself whom I'm very interested in, you know, understanding the world, not to mention having a, you know, skill as he grows up, but, you know, definitely using, you know, maker, hacker-related events and activities to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I think is very important about the hacktivism and free school classes that UBU facilitates, where... We're very much about not necessarily just about, let's just go build something cool. It's like, let's go build something that we can use to understand either our community or the world we live in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's some interested conferring happening as we're talking about the hacker moms and things happening in Oakland.
Jeremiah here. Hacktivism and being a hacker. I mean, a lot of people, there's this like, you know, misunderstanding of what a hacker is. And, you know, the history of the word is, you know, basically someone who hacks code apart and puts it back together, mm-hmm. I guess. But nowadays it's kind of people who question their like, how technology plays a part in their life and how they can use technology maybe outside the designed manufacturer's warranty, but use technology so that, you know, they understand it and better fit their life, because we're all individuals, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't want to fit into Apple's mold every single time. I want to be able to change that a little bit here and there, because I'm an individual, and that's really like what the hacktivism for me,
right.
Comes down
so
to.
So demystifying tech enough so that people can craft it to mm-hmm. suit.
And that's one of the things, bringing it home, that's one of the things at UBU and Free School we do with our classes is, you know, you want to know about how your basic operating system works. We'll talk about, you know, the memory and the processor and the hard drive and, you know, give you hands-on demos and things like that.
Right. Demos like what? Like, what kind of subject matter have been the topics of classes in the past?
So this is Wes. Like, one of our topics that we had a hacktivism class on doesn't seem very tech, but it is very topical with tech, which was cryptography and ciphers. So everything you do on the interwebs dealing with money, for the most part, should be encrypted. So understanding the basics of that. So at one point, we had somebody showing you how to do basic ciphers, and we actually went through hands-on how to do them and how mm-hmm. to solve them. And that was Kai, who wasn't able to be here today. And then we had another person who showed us the mathematics of cryptography, which was really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like the sort of intellectual end. But on the other hand, we also had I hosted a hacktivism class called Spastic Robots, where we just tore apart consumer-grade electronics, VCRs and such, and just made little art projects with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hands-on, like, you know, solder, smell of solder in your nose, you know, finger tips on the keyboards and so on.
May?
Yeah, and I also wanted to say that one of the classes that's coming up is going to involve soldering things, and I think that's very important. I want to demystify the whole process of building an electronic thing. So coming up on the Free School calendar.
Yeah, James.
Wes mentioned earlier that we had a really successful 3D printing class. There was 20 people, and people were actually turned away.
Yeah.
And this is a fascinating topic, and so one of the classes coming up, I'm going to show people further how to actually use the software to print things out.
Mm. And will there be a demonstration? I know everyone who like hears about a 3D printer wants to see it work.
Well, we won't actually have the 3D printers at the class, but I'll bring things that are printed out.
Okay, so we'll get to see evidence.
No, I've got a 3D printer. I can bring it.
All right. Well, here we are. We're forming the class on the air. Things are getting planned.
This is a lot like we normally do, just usually it's with beer.
Yes, that's true. Sorry about the lack of beer in the air room here this morning. I don't know how often you have a morning meeting. This is Geek Speak on 889KUSP.org. In just a minute, we'll be back with more of your calls. If you like, the phone numbers are phone number is 1-800-655-5877. We got a letter this week from Nina Simon over at the Santa Cruz Museum of Art and History. She wrote to Lyle and said, "Hey, Lyle, I think over Zay Frank weekend we talked briefly about my quest to find someone who can help us overhaul our antiquated AV system at the MA. Any chance you can point me to a benevolent, competent person who might want to volunteer a couple hours to help us spec out replacements?" She says, "Thank you, and it's a shout-out to those of you who are out there who are inspired by the conversation today who might want to help out at the museum. If you're interested in helping with that, please write Lyle@geekspeak.org, and he can connect you to Nina Simon at the Santa Cruz Museum of Art and History."
Nina is baiting us by using the word benevolent, isn't she?
Yes. Hmm.
I can tell.
Yes, because you are the Union of Benevolent Electrical Workers.
Indeed.
That's the group that is here today filling in for the regular geeks, providing some alternative geekery on the show today. You could say even radical geekery.
Yeah, so if anybody wanted to find out more about UBEW, they can go to ubu.org and find out how outdated are the website of a bunch of geeks can get. It also talks about our monthly meet and geek, where we usually go to the crepe place, the creepy mm-hmm. palace, as we call it, on the last Thursday of the month. So feel free to join us, and we'll geek out and laugh.
Okay. And if there are people out of the area who are interested in the sort of thing that you're up to, can they connect with you in some way?
Absolutely.
And why would they do that? To form their own UBU, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say, it's like there's nothing special about this area that said, you know, you can magically create this group. I encourage people who are outside of the Santa Cruz or Monterey Bay area to go and just do it themselves.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like all it really takes is a round table and pitchers of beer and some geeks. That's all it takes.
And commitment. I mean, for a long time, it was just a couple people, you know. And we host little hacker nights where we were working on stuff, and mm-hmm. little social nights where we got together. So I think that, I mean, this is with anything, whether you're into quilting or whether you're into technology, just getting together with community on a regular basis is super valuable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's like classes and things like that posted at the UBU website.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's ubew.org.
You are correct.
Okay. All right.
People are welcome to call if they have questions about, like, when we say radical, what do we mean? Are we jihadists? What are we?
Right.
Are we?
What is your deal?
Fundamentalist technologists?
Do you have bombs?
We do not have bombs.
Okay.
We have
bombs.
Lip balm, maybe. But,
lip balm. Okay.
So I think maybe you wanted to talk about radical. Maybe I should. This is Wes. This is a subject near and dear to my heart. So like I said, I think a radical is a person who looks at the roots of a situation, like a radish, the word rad. So in looking at technology, the question to us is, how is it useful? Who is it available to? Who gets to use it? Who doesn't? How do we use that as a tool and not be used by the technology?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So... And for us, it's less about money and more about fun and creating things that feel useful to us and to others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think sustaining a community.
Right. Jeremiah, you had some input on that.
And something that Wes and I have echoed back and forth for several years now, however many years we've talked about stuff, is that one of the more, like... radical, one of the craziest things you can do as a person in this world is educate yourself and empower yourself and question, like, all of these things that are foisted upon us.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing you can do with your life. And really, I you know, just bringing it back to who we are and what we do. I think that's what we try to encourage in our population.
Well, what about this, guys? We're supposed to be on top of our healthcare now, on top of our tech, apparently. You know, like it's more and more on the consumer to understand what it is that they're being fed and to not just sort of take it in passively, but to be an active participant in every aspect. It's a little overwhelming. No?
Yes.
Yes. Wholly agreed. Like, that's really convenient for the corporations to put it on you.
Yeah.
To be responsible for these things that people fought and died to be part of, you know, like pretty soon, like, you know, no weekend, you know, like how many people who actually work like in tech work 40-hour weeks?
Yeah, you know that's that sort of a delightfully low amount of time to be working, right? If you're in the tech industry.
40-hour week. That's so,
I remember those.
1930.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how many people? Yeah, it. Mm-hmm.
And
I'm with you there, buddy.
Yeah.
And maybe one of the things to combat that is bringing your community into it. Like, hey, these are the options that I'm presented with, and you know, I don't know anything about this. Do any of you know anything about this? That's where we come in. That's where.
Oh, okay. Sharing knowledge as a group. Yeah.
Right. So bringing that back to what you said earlier is sort of a maker DIY culture. So, for instance, if you know a guy who knows how to fix computers, mm-hmm. and they know a lady who knows how to, you know, wire internet or whatever, then you don't necessarily need to rely on paying people money. And so the more you can do outside of exchange economy, and the more you can do within your community, the mm-hmm. more self-sufficient you are.
I see.
And the less dependent upon those corporations that make money off of your ignorance.
Got it. So it's not just about I have to understand everything for myself, but it's good to be connected enough to my community to know where the resources are, where we can help each other and not be reliant on.
Exactly. So it's not just about community. It's not just about autonomy. It's about autonomy and mutual support.
Mm-hmm. Autonomy together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are social animals, after all.
Fascinating. Well, we have a call from Mike in Aptos, who's concerned about malware and how to protect against viruses and such. And he admits to being an AOL user. Please, no disparaging of AOL. It's a thing that people actually use. So let's hear from Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are we doing this morning?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Well, fine, until I heard your host or one of your people do that quick little snick on AOL also.
Yeah, that smarted,
hour,
huh?
Not an hour before my wife relayed some word from a computer guy that was trying to clean up a hand-me-down desktop to our teenager.
Yeah,
that is the worst possible thing we could possibly use for letting stuff through, because he listed 2,000 items off this hard drive that I had under virus protection and adware and all what I thought was protected.
Right.
So what's the story in general? I mean, is AOL a sieve, and does virus protection not really work? I use Iola System Mechanic and all the things that I could possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like it doesn't help.
Well, May, what do you think about that?
Well, one of the things about AOL, AOL kind of pioneered the concept of bloatware, where, you know, they'll give you a service, but in addition to the service, they'll give you an added value service, which is, you know, we're going to throw ads at you. And sometimes those ads were perhaps not as well-screened as they possibly could have, or perhaps some bad guys noticed, hey, look at all these ads going into people's hard drives. Let's, you know, piggyback on there and see if we can't, do something bad with their systems. So one of the reasons that some people have a bad, you know, attitude towards AOL is that they offer a basic service plus stuff that you probably really don't want. Whereas if you went with, I don't know, I don't want to give out recommendations of ISPs, but there are ISPs out there that are a little bit better than AOL in terms of leaving you alone to not have to, you know, install the ask toolbar or, you know, whatever bit of bloatware they want to add.
Bloatware, is that what it's called?
That's kind of what it's called.
I think you just coined the term.
Jeremiah.
I want to apologize. I know a lot of people who work at AOL. It's actually a fine company. They do own a lot of media now, and they can do their own thing, but they're not a terrible company, and they're not trying to hurt you. As for the virus protection, and
but it sounds like it's time to cut the cord. It's the only email I've ever had in 20 years.
I still have an AOL account.
You do, Jeremiah.
Yeah, of course.
Jeremiah.
Of course. Who doesn't have an AOL account?
Basically told to go through another interface rather than using their software itself to go to AOL.com. And would that eliminate some of the problem?
I think so. If it's what I think that you're talking about, I believe so. Because there, AOL had some older client software, and if this is an older system, then yeah, it may be time to move up to something newer.
This is why we discovered it. We rotated our computers. I bought a new desktop for my business, and we gave one to the teenager,
mm-hmm.
and we had it wiped and cleaned and set up for him. And this guy found thousands of items on a computer I thought was protected.
I mean,
you know, I had antivirus software. I had anti-malware, or so I thought. And I don't know if we can mention brand names.
Yeah,
but,
you can.
You know, I had Kaspersky, and before that I had McAfee, and then I had the Iola system mechanic thing.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I think you're doing the right thing.
Okay, Mike, we've got more input for you from Wes.
Mike, I got something for you. It sounds like you're already doing the right thing having virus software. I think I'd recommend that not just for you, but for everybody. Regardless of who your ISP is, it's totally possible to get malware through your email and through stuff you download. So getting a good recommendation of a good reputable malware or what is it called? Antivirus software. Good thing to have on your computer for sure.
I hope that addresses part of your question, but it does sound, Mike, like you've got a new awareness that there are things afoot, and then just buying some simple software doesn't necessarily take care of the problem.
And Mike, you know, just keep all those protection programs up to date. You know, continue to update them. It really does sounds like you're on the right track. Maybe there was another vector for infection. You know, maybe there was, you know, maybe you browsed to a website that was infected or something like that. There's so many different vectors of attack now that it's really hard to keep it all locked down.
Just keeping it updated is
keeping
one
it
way
updated to... is definitely.
I guess that's why I need Tor.org and LittleSnit, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right, Mike, thanks for your call.
Thank you so much.
Bye. All right. Well, we're in sort of the closing moments of the show, gang. Maybe we could talk about the takeaway, things that you want people to understand as they go out into the world about tech and their relationship to it. Ooh, it's a stumper.
No, I've got something.
May's got something.
No, I was just going to say, it's like one of my favorite sayings is, you know, make a living, not a killing. And a lot of people who grew up in the tech industry, I think that might resonate. So, you know, I just encourage people to think about life, think about using technology to support your life, not necessarily to support new technology.
Wes.
This is Wes. So... we have people who are part of UBU or consider themselves people who come occasionally but feel like maybe they are frauds at being true geeks because maybe they don't pass some mysterious geek litmus test.
And it sort of strikes me that the whole point of the group is that you don't have to be a special anointed geek to interact with geekery.
You don't, but at the same time, if you were hanging out at a table with us, it could be a bit intimidating as we're talking about, you know, like Internet V6 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Something that for most people is a tad arcane, you know? But I think that since all the people who are listening are either geeks or geek lovers, I would encourage you to bring somebody into the fold who may not consider themselves geeky enough,
mm-hmm.
and assure them that if they have an interest in something that they want to pursue around technology or around whatever geekery is their mm-hmm. specialty, to pursue it and not worry about labels, don't worry about judgment, and then just go through it and then support those people as they do that.
Yeah, so that being interested is enough of a reason to pursue.
Being curious in the world is a value that is very, very, that is the essence of geek culture.
Mm-hmm. That is kind of the case, right? It's just the fueling of enthusiasm.
And since, Bonnie, I've known you for many years, and I know that you're also a person who is a shy geek. And so you are a person much like I want to encourage to like say like, hell yeah, I'm a geek.
All right. Well, I've gone so far as say that, you know, I've been raised by geeks. They are my people. And I have not yet taken the leap to calling myself a geek, although I noticed that Lyle does whenever I'm on the show, which is very sweet of him also to allow me to host this thing. This has been Geek Speak for February 9th, 2013, a discussion among geeks of the local union of benevolent electrical workers. Today we had Wes Modes, May Hamrick, Jeremiah Daniels, and James Burgess. You can find them at ubew.org and find out more about the topics we discussed today at geekspeak.org. I'll be updating our show page immediately after this show. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used by permission. I want to thank Rick Fulman for managing the phones. I've been your host today, Bonnie Jean Primsch. Next week on Geek Speak, Lyle's back from Paris. Will he have an accent? Thanks for listening. This is Central Coast. Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org. And normally, there's a Geek Speak theme here, so I'm just going to play it now.
Do we hum it?
No, I got it. Totally got it. Hey, guys, thanks for listening. Any last words? Anybody?
Empower yourselves.
Empower yourselves. Yeah, you can do it. All right. Well, stay tuned to KUSP 88.9.